Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sutter, and joined by a very special guest today's show. He used to be up in Phoenix with us covering the Suns. He went down and got a job with The Athletic covering the Arizona Wildcats. He's on today with us to talk about not only DeAndre Ayton and his growth from U of A to now entering into year three, entering into 2021, but also two intriguing prospects who could be fits for the Phoenix Suns, Nico Mannion and Josh Green, and his CJ Holmes of The Athletic. CJ, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man. Good to hear from you, Evan, man. Long time no talk.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm really glad to get you on today. And we're going to dive in, like I mentioned, to start off today's show. Talk about DeAndre Ayton, because you were up in Phoenix with us around this time when Ayton was in his rookie year and really talking through in the pre-draft process about how he looked like at Arizona. I imagine you've watched a lot of Ayton tape yourself over the years with looking back at stuff. What stands out the most to you? I know his defensive improvement is really big. That's one I want to hit on with you first, CJ, is this his defensive improvement, because the Buffalo game, that's the historic game. I'm going to look back on DeAndre Ayton as far as defensive deficiencies, where he got kind of exposed in that game. But looking from where he was at U of A to now, CJ, you see Ayton averaging 19 points, 12 rebounds, almost 2 blocks per game, doubled his block percentage this past year for the Suns. It feels like the sky's the limit for this guy, doesn't it?
I mean, it really does. And, you know, Ayton has, you know, all the skills necessary to be, you know, a dominant big man in the modern NBA. You know, last year when I was up in Phoenix was, you know, I didn't get the opportunity to cover Ayton when he was in Arizona, but I was around, I got to cover his rookie season last year. And kind of what stood out to me the most is just how he was able to make that transition. I mean, the guy averaged 16 and 10. As a rookie, and that's no easy task. I mean, he played in 71 games, started 70, and the guy was pretty efficient. I mean, he shot 58% from the floor. Now, heading into year two, while his efficiency might have taken a slight step back, that scoring average did increase. Now, granted, it's been limited action because Ayton had to deal with that or suspension early in his sophomore campaign. But Ayton's points are up, like you said. His rebounds are up. His blocks are up, which means, like we talked about, his defense is improving. And I think that's just what people wanted to see out of Ayton more as a rookie. You know, sitting up in the press box, the word soft was thrown around a couple times. But, you know, as Ayton continues to come into his own, he's going to continue to get more aggressive and to believe in himself more, and to, you know, not be scared to, you know, go in the paint and, you know, knock some heads off. You know, what I really want to see from Ayton is, you know, as a modern NBA big, I want to see him step out and attempt a few three-pointers. I mean, has the guy either even attempted or made a three-pointer in his career yet?
No, he's attempted a few, like, chuckers, but outside of that, he's not made one yet, which is intriguing, CJ, because at U of A, he actually expanded his range a little bit and shot that until, I believe, Sean Miller put a stop to that once they got on the conference play and realized he's just a bully and he can just handle himself inside. But do you think that's an important skill set, like you see from Karl Anthony Towns, these Nikola Jokic's of the world, where it's kind of important for Ayton eventually to step out and be a three-level scorer?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly doesn't hurt, right? It's not extremely necessary, but you look, like you say, look at the Karl Anthony Townses, the Lauri Markkanens, these players who are able to add additional value to their teams because they are able to stretch the floor. And when you got a big like DeAndre Ayton who can step out and shoot it, I mean, that just leads to opportunities for everyone else at the offensive end. So I wouldn't mind seeing Ayton tap back into that element of his game. It's only going to make himself and the Phoenix Suns a better team offensively.
Looking at his year so far, CJ, like I mentioned, 19 points, 12 rebounds per game. And like you mentioned as well, you were around throughout his rookie year. I imagine you've watched a few Suns games yourself throughout the year so far. What's stand out the most to you as far as his improvements go this year?
As far as improvements to, you know, Ayton's jump from, you know, his rookie to sophomore season?
Yeah, correct.
Like we talked about, the biggest thing has to be his defense. I mean, he went from averaging somewhat, maybe like 0.9 blocks per game as a rookie to averaging almost two. Like, he nearly doubled his block output. You know, and he just seemed more confident, because there are times during DeAndre's rookie year where he just didn't seem all that confident. And, you know, the guy started the season – he's got off to a strong start this season. And my thing is, man, what would these numbers look like if, you know, DeAndre didn't have to deal with that suspension, if he was able to, you know, catch that rhythm? Because the Suns were playing great basketball early in the year. And again, am I right?
Yeah.
Then when DeAndre went out, things kind of took a little bit of a dip. But biggest thing was, you know, I admit I did not watch a lot of Phoenix Suns basketball this year. I was too busy watching, you know, Khalil Tate throw passes out to the sideline when he should have, you know, threw it away. But from the Suns games, I did see DeAndre just looked more comfortable. He just looked more confident. He looked like a number one draft pick, and I'm not saying that he wasn't that as a rookie, but, you know, heading into the second year, it seemed like he was getting to own it and being able to take on more of a leadership role on that team.
Yeah, and that's the big aspect, too, heading into his third year, the all-important year before that he is extension eligible after next season, is just taking those big steps forward. And CJ, when you see these developmental bigs and their young careers like Anthony Davis, the Karl-Anthony Towns, like you mentioned before, do you think Ayton has to take that start late next year, CJ, when you're entering into a year where he is eligible for a contract extension? And if he produces at a pretty high level, if he takes that superstar leap, CJ, he's probably in line for a max contract with the Suns. So how big of a year do you think it is upcoming for Ayton to kind of hone his skill set and make him an all-around better player?
Well, he's trending upwards, right? He's trending upwards. You know, the Suns are slowly but surely trying to build, you know, a good team around him. But like you said, you know, this is a contract year for Ayton. It's do or die. You know, if he doesn't do it this next year, then he's going to find himself out of Phoenix. But, you know, if he plays his potential, if he plays the way that we all know he can play as a, you know, a seven-footer who is so skilled, who's such a soft touch around the basket, you know, if he can play with that aggression, take on that role of that leader, and most importantly, take some of that pressure off Devin Booker, then yeah, he is going to be that guy. He's going to be an all-star, you know, he's going to be an all-star out in the West because, you know, that's guard heavy out there, right? He certainly has the opportunity for, he just has to put it all together. And, you know, like I said, when he does that, people are going to start looking at Ayton as one of the better bigs in the league. He's going to be an all-star and the Suns are going to be a better team because of it.
Yeah, that's the big aspect with Ayton. And we're going to dive in now into the next segment of our show talking about Nico Mannion, Josh Green, the two freshmen highly recruited that ended up in U of A, and CJ the chance to cover them up close daily for The Athletic in Tucson. And before we do so, I want to hit on our sponsor today's show, which is Rock Auto. Suns fans, you want to get your car fixed at a cheaper price compared to the competitors, go to rockauto.com right now because it makes everything so convenient for you. For example, a fuel pump assembly at the competitors is around $355, but with rockauto.com, it's only $217. Also, the chain store fronts at different price tiers for professional mechanics to do yourselfers, but rockauto.com's prices are the same across the board for everybody and they're reliably low. RockAuto.com is also a family business serving auto part customers all throughout the world, and they're able to be a unique catalog and remarkably easy to navigate their website. So, Suns fans, go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How'd You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Again, that's Locked On, LOCKEDON, in their How'd You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. They have amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. So, go to RockAuto.com right now to take advantage of this amazing deal they have to offer, Suns fans. You have to guess just a second to talk Nico Mannion. All right, CJ. I know a lot of Phoenix Suns fans probably know the name Nico Mannion because he was very hyped up this past year. He's in the Scottsdale, Phoenix area at Pinnacle High School. He helped them win a title, as state title as well at Pinnacle. What was it like covering him up close? Five-star recruit at U of A, kind of disappointing year, I'd say, for Nico. But what was your thoughts up close watching him in his development?
You know, it's funny. You know, a lot of people say that Nico Mannion was disappointing this season at U of A. And, you know, I admit he didn't have a spectacular year like some of these point guards you see. Like, he wasn't like a John Wall or a Kyrie Irving. He didn't have a lot of those, you know, wow moments like, hey, this is a first round pick. But Nico Mannion was second on that team in scoring. He had the most assists for a freshman point guard since Mike Bibby at 5.3 per game. And he was a second team All Pac-12 selection. I mean, like, when you look at all that, and his team was on the cusp of the NCAA tournament. And he was the starting point guard. So when you look at all that, how can you truly say that Nico Mannion's freshman season at the University of Arizona was a disappointment? Especially when he had to get the ball in the Zeke Nagy all the time. I mean, that guy was a beast. You know, Arizona needed him on the floor and the ball in his hands to be successful. Another thing is Nico didn't have a lot of help. He was the only true primary ball handler on that team. You know, that's a lot of pressure. You know, when we talked about some of these guys, these John Walls, these Derrick Roses, I'm sure there's better comparison, but these point guards who have gone high in the draft in years past, you know, a lot of times they've had good, better teams around them. You know, this 2019-2020 Arizona Wildcats team was kind of like a Frankenstein's monster, right? There were a bunch of grad transfers and, three freshmen and a bunch of grad transfers, and Devonair Dutrieve got suspended and kicked off the team earlier. You know, Chase Jeter didn't necessarily live up to expectations, and I'm not, and this isn't me trying to throw Nico's teammates under the bus. I just want people to understand the circumstances he was operating under. Now, the biggest knock on Nico's freshman season was his shooting. I mean, he shot 39% from the floor as a freshman, and you know, I think that's what people are most disappointed with. I still believe that Nico is a fantastic shooter when we talk about his strengths. The guy has an insane basketball IQ. He knows how to control the pace. He knows how to push the tempo. The guy knows how to run a team. He comes from a long basketball pedigree. His dad was drafted by the Warriors and played for a while in the NBA. I mean, his mom comes from an athletic background. And Nico's a worker. This kid is in the gym constantly, you know, putting up shots, working on his game. And sometimes people want to knock his athleticism. I've seen some videos on Instagram this summer of this kid, you know, pulling it back behind his ears before he throws it down. So I don't think athleticism is the issue. The issue with Nico, you know, last season was definitely his shooting. You know, the 39% from the floor, that was pretty disappointing. I mean, I think that, you know, other than I think Dylan Smith and Jamal Baker, you know, that was one of the worst shooting percentages on the team. And if Nico shot, you know, if Nico was in like, you know, between like 42% and 44% from the floor, you know, Arizona would have, you know, probably would have won more games. But at the end of the day, you know, Nico was solid, and the way he plays the game of basketball translates. It translates to the pro level. When you think of Nico Mannion, like, imagine if he had a better team around him, if he had NBA coaching, NBA spacing, NBA finishers. That's going to be where Nico thrives. And, you know, in terms of like projecting his NBA career, I'm not saying the kid's going to be an all-star or something, but I think he has the ability to be a quality guard at the point guard position in this league for a while. With Nico, it just comes down to situation. I mean, he doesn't need to go to a team that's going to ask him to play major point guard minutes right away. I don't think that's even going to be a possibility anymore because, you know, more or less, Nico played his way out of the lottery. I still believe he'll be a first-round pick, though. He needs to go to a team that's going to be patient with him, allow him to develop. Maybe Nico needs to spend a little bit of time in the G League. Maybe that will help. But he needs to go to a team where he's not going to be asked to carry the load right away. If you ask me, I think Golden State would be a perfect fit for Nico Mannion. You know, he already has, you know, they've been scouting him for a while, ever since the Under Armour camp he attended back in 2018, I believe. It's funny because one of Golden State's assistants, I actually wrote this in a story a couple months back, was like, out of all those kids at that Under Armour camp, Cole Anthony, Jalen Green, right? All those kids. That coach said that Nico Mannion was the only one on that court who could play minutes for the Warriors right now. That's because the kid just knows how to play basketball. I know he didn't show it as much at the college level, but the kid can shoot the heck out the basketball. If Nico goes down the confidence, and he needs to go to a team that's going to be patient with him, that's going to allow him to develop and find that confidence. And when that happens, I think people are really going to see what Nico Mannion is capable of at the NBA level.
Yeah, that's a really good synopsis you put together there, or CJ, because you look at Nico's stats, 14 points, 5.3 assists per game. If you ignore the shooting splits there, like you said, 39%, 33% from three. You saw what he did at Pinnacle High School, like you mentioned. He's definitely has the NBA attributes, the steady IQ, the passing ability that's way above average for his age. But looking at it from the Sun standpoint for a second, CJ, I think what you're describing there, like the Warriors fit, I think him sitting behind Ricky Rubio for 2 years, he has 2 years up on his contract with the Suns at $17 million each per season. I think that's an ideal mentor for a player like Nico, right?
I think so. And they're similar guys, except, you know, obviously I would think that Nico is a better shooter, or has potential to be a better shooter than Ricky at the pro level, but they're the same kind of guys. They're guys who don't rely solely on their athleticism to run the show. They're both guys who have an understanding of tempo, pace, finding open teammates, running actions, and just being a floor general. So, yeah, I do think, you know, if you're thinking about it along those terms, Ricky Rubio would be a perfect mentor for Nico Mannion. You know, point guard has been an issue for the Suns for years. Like you said, Ricky Rubio, what, has 2 years left on his contract? He's not getting any younger. Why not bring in a Nico Mannion, let him sit behind Ricky Rubio for a couple seasons, and not to mention he's from here. It makes sense. He grew up like maybe 30 minutes down the road from Talking Stick. He's familiar with the team. He was courtside for a lot of games last year when I was up there. It makes a lot of sense. But you know what I don't want the Suns to do is to draft Nico Mannion and then throw him out on the court before he's ready. Send him to the Nash Suns. Let him develop. Let him build that confidence. And then when the time's right, let him run the show. But, you know, it's all going to be about patience with Nico Mannion. He's still young. The kid's like, what, 19 years old? The sky's the limit for this kid. But it depends on him going to the right team that's not going to ask too much of him too soon.
Yeah, that's the big aspect, too. I think the Suns, from that standpoint, would be a great fit. Nico could run the second unit a little bit, be alongside Booker as a combo guard. I think he fits that mold as well pretty well, CJ. We've gone over his strengths a little bit, but what are some red flags, man, that you noticed from Nico this past year at U of A? Maybe has you some pause as far as maybe his – like you mentioned, he played himself out of the lottery a little bit, but what are those concerns that you noticed this year at Tucson?
Well, confidence. That's the thing. Nico would, you know, get into some shooting slumps. Or as we like to call it, Nico said in a press conference one of these days, but he'd have some struggles from the floor, and although he'd keep firing away, you know, it'd be, you know, sometimes like his body language would be a little negative, or sometimes he'll, you know, start pressing and taking, you know, forcing things up and taking bad shots. Another thing that kind of it was a little bit of a red flag about Nico is his ability to create off of penetration. On the break, Nico Mannion consistently finds the open man. But in terms of, you know, getting downhill in the half court, breaking down the defense and kicking the open players, we really didn't see a lot of that from Nico. But somehow he still averaged 5.3 assists per game. But you really didn't see a lot of that, you know, I'm going to break this guy down off the dribble, or like I'm going to come off a ball screen. And maybe it was just Sean Miller's offense and the way he ran things. But you didn't really see Nico like come off a, you know, get into a pick and roll situation with Zeke Nagy, you know, come off the screen, keep the defender on his hip, create some space and then throw the dime for the dunk. You didn't see a lot of that. But as a lead guard in the NBA, that's necessary. You're going to be able to have those skills. Another thing I kind of worry about is Nico's strength. Sometimes when he played against bigger, more athletic guards, he was kind of knocked off his spots a little bit. But other than those three things, I still think Nico's strengths outweigh his weaknesses. He can always get stronger. And like I told you, imagine Nico Mannion with NBA finishers, not Dylan Smith on the wing. That's no knock on Dylan. You know, not Chase Jeter in the paint. You know, no knock on Chase. But, you know, let's think about the Suns. Imagine DeAndre Ayton coming up, setting that hard ball screen. Nico comes up strong, has the option to either shoot it or, you know, take it to the hole. But no, Nico keeps that defender on his hip. He throws it up to Ayton, Ayton throws it down. You know, it's going to be – Nico's going to look like a better player when he has better players around him. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. And I think his strengths and his upside as a lead guard in the NBA they overshadow his weaknesses.
Yeah, that's a good point, Brant, there, CJ, because I think overall, I mean, Nico, for good reason, has been kind of put under the microscope with how high he was ranked number 6 overall in the top 100 five-star recruit last year. I just wanted to hit real quickly, just like you mentioned, his fit in Arizona. What was it like? Like you mentioned, his spacing was a little bit porous. Like Cole Anthony had the same issues in North Carolina this past year. But do you feel like there could have been a better structure put in place around Nico to have him thrive down there in Tucson?
Absolutely. I feel like, you know, Sean Miller ran a pass and cut kind of half court offense, right? He wanted the ball moving around. He wanted the ball working right to left. And he felt like that was the best way to create opportunities for these guys and to get the ball into Zeke. But Nico Mannion's the kind of point guard, and you saw it at Pinnacle. You know, I feel like I'm not saying Nico's a scoring point guard, but he's at his best when he's off the leash, when he just says, you know what, go get a bucket, play your game. I feel like Sean didn't necessarily let him do that. And, you know, by the time he tried to switch it up, you know, and then when he switched it up, Nico couldn't find his groove, you know. But, like, Nico needs a green light. He needs to know that he can make mistakes. He needs to know that, you know, he's allowed to go ISO every now and then. That's when he's at his best. That's what we saw at Pinnacle, and we just didn't see that really at Arizona. I feel like Sean Miller wanted Nico to fit the system instead of building the system to fit Nico, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think the closer we get to the draft in October 16th, I think it's the official date for the draft. It's going to be really interesting where Nico Mannion lands. If the Suns, let's say, trade back from the late lottery into the late teens, early 20s, I think Nico makes a lot of sense from that standpoint, TJ. I think I'm more high on him than I was before coming to this call with you, because you were up close watching every single day. And I think those weaknesses you described there are pretty fixable if you put them in the right environment, which the Suns, I think, have all those ingredients in place for him, especially the mentor and Ricky Rubio and the spacing and with Booker and Aiden and others. But we're going to move on to our final segment, talk about Josh Green, the intriguing Australian wing who played for U of A last year. But I want to remind you guys about, if you're not already subscribed to our show, Locked On Suns, whatever streaming platform listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. We're on every single streaming platform. Just search Locked On Suns in your search bar. I'll be right there to have you guys Monday, Wednesday, and Friday all throughout this time, and in 5 days a week once more as you get the basketball resuming here soon on July 31st in Orlando. So we'll be back to you guys in just a second to talk about Josh Green. All right, CJ, we're back for our last segment of the show talking about Josh Green. He went to IMG Academy this past year from Sydney, Australia, was number 13 RSCI Top 100, a fellow five-star recruit alongside Nico Mannion. They wanted to play together, end up in Tucson. When you look at Josh Green's stats, 12 points, almost 5 rebounds, 3 assists per game, the 3-point percentage, 36.1%, I think is very promising for his future, and his defense too, from what I've watched on tape, CJ, is very impressive. I think he's a player who could be a plug-and-play wing off the bench right away next year in the NBA. But what was your thoughts watching him this year at U of A?
You know, Josh Green certainly had his moments this season. I remember when they played Pepperdine back in the Wooden Invitational Tournament back in November on Thanksgiving. Josh Green absolutely dominated. I mean, this guy was throwing it down in transition. He was getting to the cup in the half court. I remember there's a sequence where he made 3 three-pointers like in a row. He was getting it done at both ends. I think he finished with like 24 and like 10 and like 5. I mean, the guy's fingerprints were like all over the court. But the thing is, you know, Josh wasn't that guy consistently throughout the entire year. A lot of that had to do with injuries. He had just this back injury that was really, really, really like holding him back. And it led to a lot of inconsistent play. And his outside shot, you know, I got this in front of me right now. He shot 36% from three. I mean, he shot as much as I used to sit there and say, oh, man, Josh is struggling as a shooter. He shot a higher three-point percentage than both – than Nico Mannion and – let's see. And Jamal Baker Jr., I think. And Jamal Baker Jr. is supposed to be the team's designated sniper this season after transferring from Kentucky. So, you know, maybe I was a little overcritical when evaluating Josh all year. But I guess the thing with him is it just wasn't consistent. He was always valuable as a perimeter defender. I mean, the guy is a freak. He was always valuable as a threat in transition. I mean, the guy can run with anyone. The guy can finish at the rim with anyone. But my biggest thing about Josh Green was his half-court offense. You know, his ability, you know, he's an average ball handler at best at this point in his career. He's an average shooter at the best at this point in his career. Josh Green either dribbled hard baseline and tried to get to the cup, or he shot a three-pointer, but he didn't have, excuse my language, he didn't have that shit to his game. You know what I'm saying? He didn't have that craftiness off the dribble. You know, like you see from a lot of elite two guards in this league, because that's what Josh Green is going to be in the NBA. He's going to be a two guard. He's going to be a shooting guard. And he just didn't – he wasn't much of a threat offensively. But I'll tell you this. In what turned out to be Arizona's final game of the year against Washington, that was another game where Josh Green put it all together. He looked the part of a first-round pick. He looked the part of a lottery pick. I mean, that guy's fingerprints were all over that game. And I guess the thing about Josh Green was it was just his consistency all year. That's probably why, you know, he dropped. If he played a little, you know, if he was a little better in off, if he's a little better offensively, then I'm sure he'd be considered a lottery pick right now, the same way he was considered a lottery pick heading into the season. I mean, but he led the team in steals. He was third on the team in scoring. And you know, night in, night out, he brought it defensively. And you know, who knows what he would have looked like as a player if it weren't for that back injury. I mean, that thing was gnarly. He actually had to miss some time. He actually missed the UCLA and was it Cal and Stanford? He either missed the LA trip or he missed the San Francisco trip. And, you know, that kind of cut into his numbers also. And, you know, you saw that the team really struggled without him on the floor, especially at the defenseman. But here's my thing. If you're looking at Arizona's three freshmen, if you're looking at Zeke Nagy, Nico Mannion, and Josh Green, if you ask me, Evan, who's going to be the best pro of them all, I think it's going to be Josh because he just has the ability to impact the game in so many ways. It's similar to Nico, it's going to come down to the situation. All of the issues with Josh Green can be fixed. He can become a better shooter. He's going to be working with NBA coaches who can help him become more crafty. You know, craftiness kind of comes from within as a basketball player, but, you know, he's certainly athletic enough to, at the very least, become a high-level slasher at the next level, you know? You know, and he already has two skills that translate to the NBA immediately. He can guard, and he can finish in transition. And those two things translate immediately. We've seen that from a lot of guys over the years. And then as time goes on, the other things come. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So kind of looking at the Suns, I'm not sure if Phoenix is the best fit for Josh. I mean, there's a lot of wings, you know, out here with the Suns. And I kind of think that Josh will get lost in the shuffle. I mean, what do you think?
I actually kind of like the fit on paper just because I feel like he could be like almost like Nico, a slow play development here. They have like an 8-man rotation in place already. And if Kelly Oubre priced himself out of Phoenix, which is entirely possible, if he wants like 18 to 20 million plus more per year, and when he's a free agent after next season. I think it's entirely possible they can look to it, draft his replacement, or they have Cam Johnson on board like they did last year with Mikal Bridges. But I think they're very high on Mikal. I think he's the future there. So if Kelly priced himself out there, I think it's entirely possible he could get into a bigger role, Josh Green, that is in Phoenix. But I think right away in 2020, he could be like Devin Booker's backup. He could be a backup wing on this team. And I think his defense would be super valuable on this team as well, CJ, because I want to hit on that with you for a second, because his 2.8 steal percentage, 1.6 block percentage for a wing at 6'6", I think is super impressive. I mean, from the tape I've watched of him, a very good on-ball perimeter defender as well. Seems like he'd be very switchable in the next level as well. I think he's a right-away day-one defender of NBA athletes in the next level. And that's really the big swing skill for Josh Green, is that I think he has a chance to be like an all-NBA defender who puts it all together.
Absolutely. I mean, he can really turn into one of those 3-and-D guys at the next level. I mean, it's easy. I mean, who are some guys in the past that we can kind of point to? I'm trying to think.
He kind of supposed to be, if it all puts together, CJ, kind of what Josh Jackson, maybe what he's supposed to be in Phoenix. Like, he's kind of almost like a Josh Jackson type, where he has the better shot than Josh, and he didn't put together in Phoenix, but he has the defense, maybe even better defense than Josh Jackson had this career already.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and also one thing is I think Josh will be a lot more coachable than a Josh Jackson. He's a hard worker. He's a good kid. He comes from a great family. And, you know, whatever team's going to get him is going to be getting a guy that's willing to get better and put in that work. And, you know, that's the first step. A lot of these guys have so much talent, but once they get to the NBA, they're not willing to sacrifice and put in the work necessary to maximize that talent. Josh isn't one of those guys. He's a guy who's going to step into an NBA locker room, and if everything goes according to plan, he's only going to get better.
One last thing I have for you on Josh Green. I know we've hit on his strengths, his defense as well, his improving shot. If he gets a shot like 36% on the NBA level, he's going to be a legitimate 20-plus minute per game wing, whatever team he's on, because they're just so valuable nowadays. But what are some causes for concern for the Suns fans out there if they're intrigued by Josh Green that they should look up more, get into? Because, of course, you look at his shooting splits, he's only 42%. But I think there's a real good chance that his defense could override that, CJ. But what are some cause for concern, so to say, you saw this year in Tucson?
Well, before I get into the concerns, there's one thing I missed in terms of strengths for Josh Green. He is an outstanding passer, especially on the fast break. I mean, go on YouTube and look at some of the passes this kid makes on the break. Josh Green is an outstanding passer at the two-guard spot. But in terms of weaknesses, I guess I already touched on those a little bit. He's very one-dimensional offensively right now. He doesn't have a lot of, like, moves and counter moves off the dribble. At least he didn't show it at the college level. And, you know, in the NBA, you know, at some point you're going to have to learn how to create your own shot. So I could see a frustration, you know, early on with certain fan bases saying, oh, you know, all this kid can do is shoot threes, or all this kid can do is dunk. Because he just doesn't have a lot of offensive versatility at this point in his career. But that is literally my biggest concern with Josh Green, you know, other than, you know, the lack of, you know, being like a dynamic player off the dribble, you know, being like a true slasher. Other than that, I mean, he has an NBA frame. He has NBA athleticism. He can guard. He's a nightmare in transition. He's a great passer. He just needs time to develop. Like Nico, it's about going to the right situation. That's not going to ask too much of him too early, even though I do think Josh Green's going to, because of those strengths, Josh Green's going to find himself on the floor sooner rather than later. But Josh Green's going to be one of those players that ages like fine wine, man. Like, you know, the more experience he gets, you know, the more crafty he's going to be, the more tricks he's going to learn to be able to get his shot off. And that's when we're going to see Josh Green at his best.
Last one I have for you, CJ. Appreciate the time, man. I wanted to hit really quickly. I know we hit on this off air before we started. Just, it feels like this March Madness, obviously canceled due to COVID-19 as it was just happening around then. But I feel like the players like Nico Mannion and Josh Green really could have boosted their stock, because like you wrote on The Athletic, I think this team is kind of coalescing and gelling together at the right time. And I think players like Nico and Josh Green might have been lottery picks if they would have had the chance to be on that big stage.
Absolutely, absolutely. I really, truly, truly, truly believe that, like I said, you know, with Nico and Josh, they didn't have a lot of those wow moments, like, wow, that's a lottery pick, or wow, that's a first-round pick. And you know, by the time the NCAA tournament rolls around, these freshmen are basically glorified sophomores. You know, they've been through the ringer. They know what to expect. And I think – I truly think that we would have seen their best on college basketball's biggest stage. Would have Arizona put together a run? Who knows? But all I do know is when the Arizona Wildcats were clicking on all cylinders, they could beat anybody. They're one of the best teams in the nation. Winning two NCAA tournament games, I mean, it seems pretty realistic for this group. And, you know, once you get to the Sweet 16 and beyond, anything can happen. But, you know, this group was robbed of that. They were robbed of that. And if you look at, you know, players like, you know, Carson Edwards at Purdue last year, would Carson Edwards have been drafted if he didn't go crazy in the NCAA tournament? I don't think so. You know? Or at least would he have been a first-round pick? So I believe Carson Edwards was a first-round pick. Would he have been a first-round pick if he didn't have a strong NCAA tournament? I don't think that would have been the case. But he did. You know, he was able to lead his team to the – where did they get to? The Elite Eight or the Sweet 16? And because of that team's success, he was looked at as a better prospect because being good is only half the battle. You got to win games too. Your team has to have collective success. I played with some guys at Auburn, you know, back during my playing days that were just as good as any of those guys getting drafted in 2016. But because we weren't that good, we didn't make the tournament, they were overlooked because it's not just about being a good player. It's about how your play translates to team success. And I truly believe that the NCAA tournament's when we would have seen, you know, Nico Mannion and Josh Green truly turn it on.
CJ, really appreciate the time as always, man. You can go follow him on Twitter at CJHolmes22, covers U of A basketball and football for The Athletic. You can go subscribe to The Athletic if you have not already. There, I have really great deals going on. I'm an Athletic subscriber as well. I read CJ's work all the time, does awesome stuff. So appreciate the time as always, CJ.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you, and have a good day. Stay safe.